What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Halftime Entertainment decided to play the Fields of Athenry. It's not exactly a rousing, rampaging, let's get the blood up for the second half song.
No, our anthem isn't great.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
You ain't shit!
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
My fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jim McGuinness in his life.
And this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. You can text us 53106. You can also listen on News Talk, watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope and Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. This is the Saturday panel. We're going to review the sporting week between now and about 2.35, 2.40 with Sarah O'Donovan, who's in studio with me, the Cork former All-Ireland winner. How are you getting on in Camogie?
Good to be back in the studio.
Yeah, it's great. I remember speaking to you the last time I was with you in studio. It was just before the pandemic started.
Michael Lester was here next to me, and we couldn't fathom that the Olympics would be cancelled, and they were.
What an 18 months, that's all I can say. So I suppose it is progress that you're here in studio with me. We also got on Skype and Zoom there for anybody who's watching. Des Gibson, the former editor of the Irish Daily Star and group editor at INM. Des, how are you getting on?
How are you, John? How's things?
Good. You're looking very snazzy there with the background and you got the headphones and everything, so fair play.
Oh, cheers. Cheers. I've learned from Sky News. That's all you know. Thought the best for you, John.
Good man. Good man, Des. And Pillar Caffrey, are you in Spain, Pillar? Are you?
Yes, John, I am. How are you doing?
Good. Good to see you. You're getting the tan in.
Yeah, it's a bit cloudy here today, but the weather's been beautiful for the last few weeks here, yeah.
Yeah, well, great to see you and talk to you, and we'll have a good discussion over the next hour. I suppose it's been a great 2 weeks for Irish sport. All those fans back at the Portugal game and the New Zealand game, beating the All Blacks, I'll never get tired of that. I'll watch that back, that game, many times, I think, between now and Christmas. I think the lesson from the last 7 days, folks, go and do it in style. Try and win in style. Try and win, but try and win it and put a smile on everybody's face. I think we need to back ourselves in this country when it comes to sport and winning the right way.
We do. And look, the Meath the Lady started it in September, and I think we've just kind of gone from strength to strength. And I was in the Aviva on Saturday to see the All Blacks, and I'm not a big rugby fan, but I was completely invested in Ireland from the first minute.
Did you appreciate it more being back?
Hugely so. 51,000 fans, the noise. I didn't so much appreciate jumping in during the haka and singing the Fields of Athenry. I thought they could have left that off, but through the match I thought there was massive support from the fans, and I think it really buoyed Ireland up.
Des, Andy Farrell, short-termism is gone. It has to go after the way Andy Farrell and Stephen Kenny have kept at it and kept their belief in what they're doing.
It's funny, isn't it, that how kind of similar the fates have been the last few weeks, because both were under severe criticism. I know Andy Farrell, when he came in, he talked about kind of, you know, wanting to play a certain brand of rugby and a type of rugby that was quite different to the Smith era. But if you look at his first few games, bar the passion showed against England, there was very little there to kind of jump up and down about. And then we had the last couple of weeks. Like Japan, you could say, are no world beaters. Now, I know they're doing well today against Scotland at the moment, but it was the way that we attacked Japan, and it was kind of like the knee on the throat, and the way that we ran at them. And when you think, can that really be brought into the New Zealand game? And we actually played them completely off the park, and from start to finish. Now, and you actually look back at the game and go, New Zealand actually defended really, really well. I mean, for us to score tries, it took moments of brilliance, of special passing, wide passing, and finishing. And then, you know, so it's just almost kind of feel that, you know, Ireland through the years have always been kind of, you know, it doesn't matter what you do in the Six Nations or these November autumn, and it comes down to World Cup. And they're going to have a very tough one in France in 2023. And the whole thought there was the way that kind of the way that's looking at the moment, that even get through your group and get to a quarterfinal stage, they're going to face again New Zealand or France, it looks like. And you think, can you do it on the world stage? I suppose what last weekend taught us that it was the brand, it was the way they actually ran at New Zealand and dominating in nearly every area that kind of creates that optimism. And then it's kind of mirror image of the Stephen Kenny, right? Because I'd be a Stephen Kenny fan. I believe in his philosophy in terms of the way he wants the team to play. And you'd have to argue, I suppose, that certainly of the last five managers, that he probably came in, he certainly has the least at his disposal in terms of the squad. So there wasn't that much optimism, and certainly the first few games didn't display much at all. I mean, if you look at a situation where we were, and we were staring into finishing behind Luxembourg in a group, and 5 points after six games. Now, it still wasn't great with 9 points after eight, if you look, but you will look at a campaign where we would have expected to finish third in that group, even at best. Now, not quite as far back off the pace, because we never actually challenged for a qualification pace, and that would be the disappointing thing. But you'd have to look at some of the players that have come through. I mean, if you think that players, on average, and I'm talking about the squads that Brian Kerr, Staunton, etc., inherited, that, you know, you're looking at soccer players that would kind of reach their peak between kind of 24 to 30. I mean, the average age of Kenny's squad is quite incredible. I mean, some incredible finds. And then even you look at the elder statesmen, that's like McLean and so on, and you look at they're probably playing their best football. They've had their best couple of games of the last few years. And that seems to have lifted, and there seems to be a bit of positivity again. And Mark, you know, the thing about having a full Aviva, we get it for rugby all the time, but a full Aviva for a soccer game is quite unique. And you could argue a lot of that was for Ronaldo, but you could see by the crowd and the passion of the crowd on the day that I think this kind of Irish support has now gone behind Kenny, and there seems to be that wave of optimism, and he deserves the extra couple of years.
53106. Carl has been in touch. The Kiwis were on the beer in town 4 days before the match. Call it a test match, not friendly if you want. The fact is, they treat us differently at a World Cup. That is the true barometer. I don't know if they were on the beer. I know they had a pint at the storehouse and it was put on social media. So I don't know if it's fair to say they're on the beer, Carl. But you can get in touch, 53106. Peter, you know the fickle nature of management with the Dubs and that. I feel that with the rugby team and the soccer team, there's a buy-in from the players and the fans. And the fans are bought into it because they want to be entertained and they want to see our national teams play sport the way it should be played.
Yeah, look, Andy Farrell, you know, got off to a bit of a sticky start. And there would have been question marks over him after the first few games. People didn't really get what he was trying to do. He was talking about this heads-up rugby, and it's nice having a term on something, but if people aren't seeing results, they get sceptical very quickly and they lose faith in you. But, you know, at the start, he had quite a few of his key players injured. And I think it's quite similar to Stephen Kenny in the soccer, in that he's given seven debuts to guys who played against New Zealand last week, and the turnaround of personnel, and we've gone for a much younger, more vibrant, pacier set of players that are coming through now in the rugby. And, you know, you'd have to say they are playing a hugely exciting brand of rugby, which is always going to get people off their seats. And I think that's important for Irish people. You know, in most of these games against top-class opposition in all sports, the Irish are going to be underdogs. So the fans really need something to get behind and cheer. And it doesn't always have to be boot, bollock and bite. You know, sometimes it's nice to see us taking on teams with a bit of flair and a bit of belief in our own game plan. And that very much came to the fore last week. But I'd be very excited about, you know, the rugby team. The atmosphere that came across the TV monitors last week was phenomenal. I was there the last time Ireland bet the All Blacks, and it is a special occasion. I think we've only beaten them three times in our history. So these are certainly occasions to be enjoyed. And, you know, while people are saying, look, it's all about the World Cup, I think as Irish sports people, we're passionate about the big contests whenever they come around. And looking at the rugby team next year, you know, 2022 is going to be a huge learning curve for them also, because they have to play France in Paris and England in Twickenham, and then they go down and play a three test series against the All Blacks. So going into a World Cup the following year, I think we'll see them in good stead. As regards Stephen Kenny in the soccer, again, look, big question marks over him. And look, he didn't come across great post-matches in the first few disappointing results. I think he was caught a bit in the headlights himself in terms of what he was trying to get across. And then with no fans at these games, like, you know, the soccer crowd tend to be very, very passionate. But look, my two eldest fellas were over at the game last week and said it was the best atmosphere they've ever seen at a soccer game in Ireland.
This is Luxembourg, Peter, yeah?
No, sorry, this is a home game against Portugal.
Right.
Said it was the best atmosphere they've ever seen at a home game. And the fans have certainly got behind Stephen. And, you know, I'm over here in Spain, I retired, and I'm over here a good bit of the time. And I went to see Jim Crawford's under-21s play two games here during the summer. And I'd have to say, I'd be very excited about the way they're playing their football. And Stephen has obviously set the template that we are actually playing a beautiful style of football to watch, and whereby results were hard to come by initially. The players have obviously bought into it, because when you see the senior players like Coleman and Duffy coming out and backing the manager to the extent they have, and then you see the results turning around and the exciting talent that's coming through. And you see your under-19s the other night, you know, Tom Mohan's side, and getting this brilliant last-minute winner, for the under-21s against Sweden. So there's a lot of exciting stuff coming, and the game has changed. I would agree that, look, Stephen Kenny probably took over the most limited squad on paper that we've had for a long, long time. So our expectations were low, but I think people have really got behind that. Look, Ireland are trying to play a different style of football. It's a nicer style. It's more pleasant on the eye. And the fans appreciate what he's trying to do.
Should the FAI come out now, Des, and just give Stephen Kenny that deal?
Well, you know, it's not just the young players. I mean, as Paul just mentioned, that you're talking about the older statesmen like Coleman. Coleman would have a lot of sway in the FAI. And in terms of players like Duffy, I mean, remember a lot of these, even the older players, you talked about them being club players. They were having nightmares at the club. I mean, look, Duffy was hailed as a big move to Celtic, and it was a disastrous year. And a lot of the players were low on confidence and not getting their games. Probably the find of the year, there's a lot of talk about Robinson, but like Bazuno, you look at his performances last year, he only turned 19 in February. It's quite incredible. And he actually plays and he has that kind of confidence of a much older player. And I think that confidence has to come largely from the manager and the players around and the management staff. So I think if they had have finished below Luxembourg, there would have been a huge question, because it's okay talking about a philosophy and a different way of playing. That's okay if you get results. If you don't, as what happened in the first few games, and as I've said there, I agree in terms of some of his media performances after those games, especially when they were empty terraces, looked really, really dodgy. They were haphazard. Now, it seems as if he was talking to RTE at times, like on a delayed kind of feed, rather than kind of giving a careful thought. And it was worrying. But the fact the way that they're playing at the moment, and I'm talking about in terms of units and in terms of getting back and putting in the effort. You can see they're all trying. That I don't think the FAI have any choice here, apart from the fact that it gets them out of it, because they can justify giving them the contract now. Because I'd have real concern about what top manager would be, you know, kind of beating down the door to actually take over that job at the moment. And I'm being any disrespect to the Irish football team, because I'm a massive fan. What I'm saying is that I can't see anyone at this time doing any better and getting any better out of that current squad. So I think it's a no-brainer. The FAI have to extend it by 2 years.
Okay, we've got to take a break for the news. Back with Sarah Donovan, Des Gibson and Pillar Caffrey on the Saturday panel reviewing the Sporting Week. Plenty more to talk about: referees, Razi Erasmus, Azim Rafiq, Peng Shui and Rory and Shane at golf in Dubai doing so well. So 53106, you want to get in touch on the text number. You can also reach us on Twitter at Off The Ball. We're back after the news.
The Saturday panel on Off The Ball.
And this is Off the Ball Saturday until 5 with John Duggan. And Chelsea have scored again. Chelsea 3, Leicester 0 in the Premier League. Christian Pulisic on the mark. We're back with the Saturday panel reviewing the sporting week just gone with Cork's former All-Ireland Camogie winner Sarah O'Donovan, Des Gibson, the former editor of the Irish Daily Star and group editor at INM, and the former Dublin senior football boss Peter Caffrey. You can text us on 53106. Listen on News Talk, also watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. The subject of referees. So Razzy Erasmus is obviously an excellent rugby coach, won the World Cup in South Africa, now director of rugby, was the puppet master for that tour victory over the Lions for the Springboks in this summer. I think it's important to mention that he acted in an exemplary manner following the sad passing of Anthony Foley at Munster. He was the epitome of class back then. I kind of found all the tweets and Waterboy stuff funny at the time last summer, but I feel, Des Gibson, that this win-at-all-costs mentality now has seen him go over the line. He's got, what, a two-month ban now and match-day ban until next September for being found guilty by World Rugby, an independent panel, of six separate misconduct charges. He's tweeting again yesterday, maybe, Razzy, the World Cup, it was great to win it, but you need to step back at some time.
Yeah, and in fairness, it's bringing a kind of unwanted focus on it when you talk about other kind of wins. But I thought it was interesting, and it kind of it's switching the subject somewhat in terms of the whole discussion about referees and about kind of abuse and so on. I don't know if many people in the world, it certainly affected a lot of people in the city that there was a referee strike in soccer last week in junior soccer in Dublin. Like you're talking about hundreds, I think it was certainly 550 games called off. And that's for every game you're talking about kind of 30, 35 kids, plus obviously associated parents, coaches and so on. But I mean, this kind of raised his head and it was welcome because it's, I mean, I have a 24-year-old son who sort of that's still playing and you're kind of true from under eights right through. He played in rugby and it was certainly for a number of years and we didn't see it there, I have to say. But at soccer, some of the levels of abuse that referees have had to endure over the last few years, and this isn't something new. I'm talking about 20 years. It's quite incredible. And it's not, it's rarely coaches, I have to say. It's always with a huge majority of parents, and it wouldn't be just dads either, as you said. There is an incident of a near riot at an under-16 game in Dublin a few weeks ago. I'm not going to go into the clubs involved because it obviously affects, but didn't it just affect them? There were suspensions and it affected the kind of the clubs that were due to play them and the entire table and also the kind of not just the camaraderie, but you wonder at some point in certain coaches spending hours upon hours of their own time unpaid, certain levels that you wonder, like, you can see why so many people walk away. And you can also see it, there's always a natural drop off in underage sport from the age of kind of 14 to 18. And you can certainly see why, because it's just, it's unacceptable. It's a time that kind of, in England, there's a huge, and I know we were talking about the cricket situation later and in terms of racism and so on, that you actually look then at the focus, I suppose, in English football for quite some time has been fan violence and then fan racism and so on. But I think we should be looking somewhere a lot closer to home. We talk about kind of what happens at underage games in this country kind of week in, week out.
It seems, Sarah, that it's win at all costs because you were a reporter in Cork and you saw a lot of soccer matches down south. Win at all costs, I think, is one thing. And referees being fair game is another when they shouldn't be.
I agree. There should be a forum for feedback. I think maybe the governing associations need to look at forums for feedback, because not having forums for feedback is probably feeding into this kind of sense that you can have a cut at the referee. Soccer, GAA, basketball, I think every sport sees that. And maybe if there were, I suppose, more avenues for people to give feedback after games and genuinely go through their grievances, they wouldn't feel the need to actually force a shout onto the side of a field. You know, it's embarrassing to shout onto the side of a field. So that's why there needs to be feedback, proper feedback forums.
Did Camogie referees get stick that went over the line?
There would have been, yes. There's also instances where we've lost games because the referees weren't up to par, and at no point afterwards were we given an opportunity to maybe file a report and say, look, there was six or seven instances in this game where we felt we should have been given a free or we weren't dealt with in the manner that was appropriate. So I think there's probably two things running here. No opportunity to give feedback, and then people becoming overzealous in terms of their feedback on the pitch.
Because verbal abuse?
Absolutely. Yeah, and uncalled for. But I think if there was proper channels to give feedback after games, both referees and players would feel protected, because sometimes players don't feel protected either.
Did you feel when you played that you did things in the heat of the moment that when you look back, oh my God, did I do that?
100%. You know, and I suppose I had to, you know, deal with my mistakes, yellow cards, red cards. I wonder, do referees, when they make mistakes, have the same level of, I suppose, discipline applied? You know, I've seen referee matches, make big mistakes and then be given much, much bigger games to referee. And I don't know whether they've ever looked back on the games that where they made mistakes. I have to look back at my mistakes. Referees should have to look back their mistakes as well. But there should be a forum. It should be an appropriate forum, not abuse, but definitely feedback should be allowed.
There's a big thread on this, and as Des touched upon there, there's a thread between professional sport and amateur sport and different sports. Like Nick Berry pillar certainly felt aggrieved by Razzie Erasmus. He called the 62-minute video last summer, highlighting his performance in the first test as character assassination. He said his reputation as a referee and as a person will forever be tarnished. And he was found to have besmirched this referee's integrity, Razzie Erasmus. Not the first time he did this. In 2018, he directly emailed and rang a referee, Angus Gardner, after a rugby championship game. The whole subject of referees, where do you sit on that pillar?
Yeah, look, it's a great point that Sarah makes in terms of, I think in all sports, and like the one that's probably we see most on TV is the Premiership, a big part of the decision-making process is you see the referees who talk to the players during the games. They seem to be referees who are able to control things better. Where you have dictatorial referees who rule by the wave of a hand or the wave of a finger, it's far players get far more agitated with them. You know, I suppose my line on the referees was when my kids were underage, they were always encouraged in the Fianna to get involved in refereeing games. And when you went to see your kid at 14 years of age or 15 years of age, refereeing an under 10 game and hear the abuse that was coming in from parents, and I agree with Des, it was both mothers and fathers, you just sort of shake your head and say, like, we're going wrong somewhere. If this is the win at all costs that we're talking about at under 10 or under 11, you know, games of very little relevance, only development. So there's a big issue there. And I think, you know, someone like Erasmus obviously has pushed it and pushed it and pushed it in terms of this win at all costs, and maybe, you know, his arrogance has cost him in the end, in that he maybe thought he was untouchable in what he could do or say. You know, like we always had Alex Ferguson, they'd call it Fergie time, where he'd be pointing at the watch and putting pressure on the referee to play a bit longer, or, you know, managers going down the tunnel after referees at half time trying to influence the decision or whatever. So I think there's a bit of give and take. The discipline that I've seen when I went to see some of my nephews playing rugby has been phenomenal, where players don't question decisions, where in Gaelic or soccer, you didn't have that same discipline. And by extension, you know, we have a problem in the GAA that we're not attracting former players to get involved in refereeing, because players just look at it and say, sure, why would I bother? It's so much hassle and the abuse you take. So, you know, I think a lot of discussion needs to go on to how to improve this decision or this situation, and how do we get better people involved. And I think, as Sarah says, a lot of us as managers were very much held accountable, because if you're not doing your job well, you're going to get let go. As a player, if you're not playing well, you're making poor decisions on the field for your team, you're going to get dropped the next day. Referees don't seem to have this accountability that's like a public. You know, everything goes on behind closed doors. You know, referees in the GAA, they tend to have their meeting at the beginning of the year, and there's elite referees appointed now. And as the championship rolls on or league rolls on, you have very little comeback to a poor performance from a referee. And I think that's where the frustration really lies with players and managers.
It's almost
I could just make a point there, because it says, yeah, it's just, you know, I always say kind of stupid is stupid does. Like, you look at young kind of kids playing football now at times, and you're at a good level and you're watching them roll around at the slightest touch. And I think that comes a lot to do with the Premier League. And this isn't an anti-United Man United rant because it's I'm nowhere near that. But I mean, if you look at the late kind of 90s, you look at, you have those iconic moments of Roy Keane and Scholes and the guys kind of chasing after referees and shouting in the face. And that seemed to become as if it was acceptable. And then there was this kind of thing, well, we're highly paid professionals and the referees aren't, they haven't a clue. Now, it's the whole professional era of refereeing. Now it's got to the other side at times where you often see managers being interviewed on TV after live games, and you want to know what their view was on a penalty incident or so, or something that are sending off. And what you're getting is this kind of response of, well, I'd like to say this, but I can't because I'd be fined. It's almost as if they're beyond reproach. And that just comes back to, obviously, what the other panelists were saying regarding a proper approach thing. And I would say something about, in terms of watching TV, if you see someone celebrating a goal and you see rival fans in the background and the abuse and the standard, what they do in obviously in underage football or amateur sports in this country, those fans are held back. Fortunately, the fans and the thing are actually on the line and within walking distance, and that can always create problems.
I think there's two things here. There's the appraisal of referees, which maybe is lacking, and then there's the abuse of referees.
Certainly, yes.
I agree, and I think Razi Erasmus, you know, 62-minute video.
That's just madness.
Yes, 62-minute video critiquing Nick Berry's performance. There should be an opportunity, however, to be able to speak to the governing organisation after the game and say, look, these are areas where we feel the referee can improve. And I don't think in any sport you get that formality or that opportunity. And that's where we're falling down.
This actually is a good segue into dressing rooms and a culture and what we've seen from English cricket this week. Because I don't think this is about English cricket. I think this is about general culture in sport. Because English cricket, obviously, you know, cricket's played in Ireland, but it's not that big a sport. So Azeem Rafiq was a Yorkshire player. So he revealed after he appeared in front of a select committee of the UK Parliament that he sent anti-Semitic messages as a 19-year-old. So the core of the establishment in English cricket was very much shaken by his previous evidence this week that institutional racism, he claimed, existed at Yorkshire. So some of the comments that were made to him in the dressing room over two spells were just absolutely harrowing. You know, he admitted that he has apologised now for his comments when he was a 19-year-old about anti-Semitic messages. He has engaged in exactly the same type of loose insulting talk that he accused others of. It said a lot about dressing room culture, his revelations in front of that committee about the not only the racism, but the bullying that he and other Asian players experienced at Yorkshire. I do have a worry, though, that because of his actions, that this will just become a wash now and the establishment will close ranks and there won't be a change to culture. But the dressing room culture in this country, Sarah, was it good in Gaelic games? Was there ever an uncomfortable atmosphere where people were marginalised or bullied? Or did you find it, when you looked at the Azeem Rafiq stuff this week, that you could identify anything regards to, now that was a racism issue in the UK and specifically around Yorkshire, but could you find anything in what he said that resonated with you?
Certainly in terms of creating alliances. So in different teams that I would have played in, because of competition and because of the fact that, you know, you're going for a player's position or a player's going for another position, they definitely would have been alliances. And when I say alliances, I mean they'd have been three or four players would have been uncomfortable with certain players coming into the dressing room because they would have been going for their spot or their teammate would have been losing their spot to somebody else. And I would have seen that. And that's hard to stamp out because that's something that people probably don't even know that they're doing. But I think in the last number of years, and certainly with the Dublin Camogie team, as players have come into the panel, there's been a massive effort from the older players to bring the younger players in and make them feel a part of it and make them see that the competition is positive and that it's not a negative thing, that somebody is going to be as good as you and they might possibly take your place. It's all about improving teams. And I was very disappointed to read some of the things that happened to Rafiq. You know, basic things like not being willing to learn a player's name because it was too difficult and instead calling them Steve or Kevin. You know, that should never have been, it's something that should have been allowed to happen at a very basic level. And I'm shocked, you know, reading that was allowed to happen.
Is this a cultural thing for English cricket that they're just dealing with Pillar, or is this something more widespread, you think, in sporting culture around the world?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the shocking revelations that came out where, you know, we've come to know and expect it nearly from fans down onto pitches towards players in chants and you know, around the world. But, like, you know, an entitlement should be that everybody, you know, is able to play sport regardless of their colour or race or where they're from. And, you know, cricket being one of these sports that, like, you know, they play against an English cricket team, for example, like a lot of their games are against Pakistan and the West Indies and India. So you would think that these guys, you know, would have been an acceptance a long, long time ago. And for, you know, some of the stories that come out they're actually quite disgusting in terms of knowing that this was in your own dressing room, that this was happening, and this type of behaviour was, while the people who were perpetrating it was one thing, but there was so many others that were witness to it, and nobody seemed to be think that, yeah, look, hang on, this is out of order, this is, you know, this is not dressing room banter, this is actually racism. And I think, you know, to think that in 2021, you know, we're still talking about it, we're dealing with it a long time from the fans. And I was reading an interview from Gary Neville this morning where he said that he thinks that the English soccer team will be one of the first teams, international teams, to walk off the pitch because of racism's chance, that's how strong a group they are. And that just shows where this is at in dressing rooms, that it is actually being discussed. To see this coming out from, you know, a dressing room of recent times amongst professional players, it was quite upsetting, really. As regards GA dressing rooms, I would agree with Sarah. Look, part of the fun of the GA would have been that, look, there was great banter in dressing rooms. There was always good characters who kept things alive and kept things jovial. You know, clicks was one thing that you would have to be careful of in management. You know, especially a talented newcomer coming in, where he might be marginalised, and where that would manifest itself would be in actual training games, where maybe a group of three or four players would decide not to pass him the ball or to keep him out of a play or whatever, or players among themselves would come up with strategies to keep themselves prominent and in selectors' eyes. And look, you have to be smart to be able to see through that, but that's only players trying to preserve themselves and make their careers a little bit longer, maybe. There's not a nastiness in that. It's more self-preservation.
Not bullying, Peter, not bullying.
Yeah, not bullying, no. And I wouldn't have witnessed bullying in you know, any of my time in dressing rooms in GA.
Des Gibson, I never want to hear the word banter again, because that seems to be the word that's used to cloak egregious behaviour.
Yeah, and in fairness, you're talking about the cricket game. To be honest, what I know about cricket, you could probably ride on the back of a poacher's stamp. But, I mean, this is a wider issue. I was really intrigued there, what the way Pillar were saying, and it's kind of, you know, that old phrase, you know, all it takes for evil to thrive is for good to do nothing, you know, that it's not just the ones that actually get off on the abuse. It's the ones that kind of stand by and don't intervene. And I'm actually delighted to say that I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's a generational thing. I think things are a lot better. I think kids kind of this generation are a lot smarter. It comes as well with a more diverse and inclusive culture that we have and that we live in. And I suppose that was the surprising thing about the cricket story, is that you would have thought from the outside that cricket, and that's not just international, but I'm talking about kind of particularly club level in England, that I would have thought it was one of the most diverse and inclusive sports in the country. But it's one of these things that, say, cricket wouldn't be a sport that I would have an interest in, but it's one of those with particularly stories like this, when they raise their head, that you take interest and you have to stand up and take interest.
Yeah, I think with the issue with English cricket is at a recreational level, there's, you know, completely adequate representation and strong representation of minorities. But then when you get into the counties, that's definitely less so. And the institutional aspect of it, like as Azim Rafiq would have said, that he believes a lot of the players who would have given him stick will not have even remembered it. I was just really disappointed that then it came out that he'd been involved in stuff that he shouldn't have, you know, because I think that makes it a bit of a wash. And that kind of almost like feels that the establishment then gets off the hook. We'll see what happens. I think, but I just, it was one of those stories that did filter out more so than from being this thing within one country to something that's broader. We have a lot of text in here on referees and 53106. Just going to read some of them out here with Sarah Donovan, Des Gibson and Peter Caffrey on the Saturday panel. I've refereed a few camogie games in the past, gave up twice after the abuse I got from players, officials and fans in practice matches. Practice matches, as one of our texters. Regarding referees, refs should rate each team, coaches and parents as part of his or her report card. If a pattern emerges about a team being abusive over a number of weeks, they should be docked points or fined, says Alan in Sandyford in Dublin. Lads, I'm a rugby ref in Leinster and a coach of youth soccer team. The abuse in soccer is a constant. Every game, in a minimum, the ref gets foul language from the players and sidelines and is taken as a given. In rugby, it's a growing scourge. Not in every game, but it's creeping in, certainly more passive-aggressive. Example is where you'll have players without foul language still show a high level of disrespect and imply that you don't know what you're doing. And World Rugby does review feedback from coaches in the pro game. They also have conferences with coaches pre-tournament to look at laws and coach feedback. 53106. Anybody want to come in on those texts?
I'm disappointed to hear that camogie matches are the scene for feedback that's not positive, and you know they've called it abuse there, and that's very disappointing to hear. I think there's enough governing bodies in the Camogie Association to be able to sort it out and, you know, have meetings about it. People love to talk, so let's get around the table early in the year and say what's appropriate and say what's not okay.
It's an amazing story. Go on.
Yeah, no, John, I was going to say, like, in my early years as Dublin manager back in 05 and 06, I remember all managers being called into Croke Park one year and down to Athlone another year at the start of the season, and referees making a presentation back to the managers about, look, what they'd seen from the previous season and things they picked up on and things that they were going to be hard on this year. And it was great clarity, because you've seen referees as basically humans in the GA doing a job the same as yourself, not getting paid, and you know, putting their hand up and say, look, we will make errors the same as you as a manager will make errors, or the same as your top player will make errors. But what we are trying to do here now is explain to you what we see. And, you know, they were showing examples of yellow cards and red cards and how marginal they were. And when they came across with a human face, the managers, I felt that year, were a lot more appreciative of the referees. And it was far less, obviously, when decisions went against you in tight games, you felt hard done by. But there was an acceptance of, yeah, hang on, you know, you've seen these fellas in the flesh talking, you know, in a room together with you as an equal. And it made it, when you met them referee, you know, a Leinster final later on in the year, it was a far more human situation when you went up and shake hands and wished him that he'd have a good game, you know. And I think that was, for some reason, the GAA stopped doing, but I thought it was a great initiative when it was around.
We also had this week Peng Shui, the former top-ranked doubles player in women's tennis and Wimbledon doubles champion, going missing. The Chinese native accusing a former government official of sexual misconduct on a social media platform, Weibo. This was deleted after 30 minutes. Then an email was sent purportedly by her via CGTN, a media channel aligned to the Chinese government, saying that she was fine. Also, photos have come out as well. The WTA, the women's tour, have a hard time believing that. Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka also expressing concern over her welfare. It was a different episode, but Jack Ma, this billionaire businessman, just disappeared for months after challenging the regime with some of his comments. This is a very disturbing story, Sarah O'Donovan. You'd hope that pressure from the international community will deliver a response that's favourable, and we'll know that Peng Shui is okay. But it feels to me that the Chinese government can do what they like, and the WTA have come out with a strong pushback against them, which is good to see.
It's the first time that I feel that, you know, human rights are being looked at ahead of politics and money, essentially. The Biden administration has rode in as well. There's talks that they won't be going to the Olympics, which is a very strong stance to take. Delighted that the WTA have stepped in and said, we don't need China, you know, and that's what it feels like. They're putting Peng Shui ahead of money and politics, and very proud to see that. I hope that in the next couple of days that there's basically, that she comes out herself of her own volition and is able to speak freely, because to think that she wasn't allowed to speak her mind in the sense that her Instagram post was deleted in the free world is absolutely crazy.
This is a mad story, Des, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was looking at a Sky News report this morning that basically that what's being put out now by the official state news agency, as we know, that has no credibility whatsoever, saying that she's alive and well and just has told them that she doesn't want to be disturbed for a few days and that she will make a public statement the next few days. It's incredible, but I don't think it's not just WTA and the women's professional players. It's the likes of Andy Murray and Djokovic and all have come out very publicly, even on the been discussing the contemplating strike in support until they got to the bottom of this. And I suppose the Chinese authorities, you know, have a job to do now, and they actually have to come out and actually solve this mystery. But again, look, this is a matter of human rights and the abuse as such that we've known about for decades. But we'll watch this space very carefully.
Amazing that this is going on in 2021 in an industrialised, globalised world. There's like a former Wimbledon champion, top-ranked double player in the world. We don't know how well she is or not well. It's incredible stuff. A good news story is Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry pillar. I'm a bit worried for them maybe the next 10 to 20 years, because I don't see players of comparable status coming through golf. I feel we've been through a golden generation. I'm looking at the Dubai leaderboard, and after 54 holes, Rory's leading on 14 under par. He's had 29 professional wins in his career. Shane Lowry's just 3 shots back. They're great ambassadors, I think, for the island. And look, let's hope they have another good 10 years in them.
Yeah, I was watching it there earlier. Fantastic stuff. I actually never seen Shane Lowry coming off an 18th green fuming as much as he did. He missed a great birdie opportunity on the 18th to put him at 12 under. And normally, you know, he can shrug his shoulders, but he stormed off nearly ahead of his caddy. I'd say he was fuming because he didn't play well. Like, Rory shot 5 under today. I think Shane went round in level par. So he would have been disappointed, albeit he's only 4 shots back. But 4 shots will seem a big gap to Rory with the 5 or 6 players that are between them. So look, it's, you know, when they're playing at that level, they're playing at, they're just phenomenal players to watch. And look, those of us that would know Shane Lowry and with his GA connections, and he's such a modest guy, and he's such an ambassador. And, you know, I'm particularly intrigued with the job Michael Dignan has done down in Offaly as chairman, and getting Shane to come in as a sponsor, and the prominence he's given to Offaly GAA over the last 12 months with his continued success. And it's a great story. And it's a great Irish story. And, you know, he's not your typical looking golfer. 90% of the time, he's going around with a smile on his face. He's a happy guy, and we should be very proud of him. And look, Rory's just a phenomenal athlete. You know, there's lots more wins in this guy. I think he'd probably finish it out tomorrow for another big payday. But these are guys playing an elite sport at the very highest level, and you know how competitive the golf is. Like, to be up there every couple of weeks challenging for honours the way Rory does, you know, he is truly a great sportsman.
That's a good point you make about the international aspect of a pillar. I'm going through the leaderboard here. McIntyre, Scottish. Bjork is Swedish. Hansen is Danish. Morikawa, American. Keimer, German. Burmester from South Africa. Thomas Peterson, Belgium. Minwoo Lee, Australia. Des, you're a golf nut, I know. You must be.
I'm a golf nut, yeah, and I wouldn't be as worried as you are about the future of Irish golf, to be honest.
Why not?
We haven't even mentioned Seamus Power, who's going incredibly well over in America again this week. But in regard, when you're talking about Rory McIlroy, you're talking about, like, you know, the creme de la creme. You're talking about one of the best players, and not just Ireland, but the actual sport has ever seen. And people talk about him having an off few years. As you mentioned, 29 pro wins. And also in terms of the end of year championship and the PGA Tour. And it's just a kind of, like, you look at that, and the fierce competitor. Like, he had this tournament really kind of in his grips yesterday. and he was, you know, leading going to the last, and a par five for him would be just, it's a handy one. He birdied it today, he birdied it day one. But he had a bit of a disaster. He came off with a seven on the last to basically open the door for the rest of the field. But again, today he seems to have shut that again. He's come out, hit a five under when he started with a bogey, and it's just been with ease. He's back into the front again. Lowry is not out of it. He's only three off. Yeah, he didn't have a great day. Only a couple of birdies. I think he finished one under. But it was. He's only three off. He's tied fifth. I mean, he's well there. It's a big payday, and I wouldn't rule him out tomorrow either.
Do you see players coming through of that level in the next 10 years?
When you talk about, I mean, we talked about that. What's the Bray player, Paul?
Paul Dunn.
Paul Dunn, sorry. We had hoped for Paul a few years ago, but he hasn't quite actually fit that potential. Seamus Power has. Obviously, he went to college in America, and he's based over there. Certainly this season, I think he has taken a huge jump.
Yeah.
And again, I come back to, you're talking, we still have a couple of players in the world top 50. I mean, Lowry's there, McIlroy's still at number 8, which he wouldn't be happy with. And you can see, I was delighted to see the passion that he showed in the Ryder Cup, that he still has it. I think that he might feed off that this coming season and next year regarding to get back into the major circuit. But yeah, look, it's hard to see what's coming through. We obviously have success on the women's tour as well. So
Leona, yeah.
I wouldn't be as negative as you are, to be honest.
I'm not negative, I'm just being challenging. don't worry. Leona Maguire, been an amazing year for her. I just hope she gets that win. That Solheim Cup was a real landmark performance.
She's been very consistent, and
yeah, that's it, isn't it? Consistency.
Yeah, and her standards, you know, haven't dropped. She's just building and building. So she's an incredible athlete.
5-3-1-6. Just a text to finish. What about the massive issue in GA where younger players are brought up to play on teams above their age because they're naturally good footballers, while other less able players are left on the sideline and thrown on the last 20 minutes of most games? Thus, they never get the chance to develop. And let's face it, not all players develop at the same pace. This has been the case for one of my children. Now he's on a senior reserve team. When the senior team were eliminated from the league, lo and behold, half of them are now playing the reserve games while the actual reserve players sit on looking at them, says Mary in Cavan. What do you think of that, Pillar?
Yeah, look, you know, this you have to get the balance between winning and developing. You know, the club situation, county situation, whatever it is. You know, if you're a manager, you want to create a winning environment and you're trying to win and justify you being the top team in the club or whatever. There is also, you know, you have to have the eye to the development of players. You know, you go down into this where even in club life, do you split teams into A and B, or do you keep them all as equals and just roll them out? You know, I'm a believer that, look, if you put four kids out playing, they'll eventually find out that, look, we wanted two sets of goalposts and we want to play 2 versus 2 and we want to count the scores. So that tells you that they want to know who's winning. And you have to try and develop that and encourage it while also looking out for the late developers. And, you know, sport is for everybody. Elite sport is only for a few. So it is a fine line getting that balance right.
Yeah. And you got the Dublin final tomorrow, Pillar.
No, I'll watch it. I'm still over in Spain, but yeah, it always takes my attention. I'm a great believer in the competition. I think it's the hardest championship to win in Ireland at senior football level, and it's an intriguing one tomorrow with Jude's and Kilmacud. Jude's have got this tag of being the most consistent team in the country. Amazingly, they played in 9 of the last 10 semi-finals in the Dublin Senior Football Championship. Got to 3 finals and haven't won one yet. They're only founded since 1978, so it will be a huge occasion for them tomorrow. They're playing one of the strongholds of club football in Dublin, Kilmacud Crokes, and I suppose the big story around Kilmacud this year is Paul Mannion opted out of the Dublin squad and continued playing with Kilmacud, and he's played some of his best football ever this year. I actually seen him in the league final back in May playing against my own club, Nafina, where Nafina happened to beat them that day. But Paul Mannion scored something like 2-8 that day, being marked by 2 defenders, one of them being Johnny Cooper. He was just unmarkable. And look, as Dublin fans, we look forward to seeing him getting back in a Dublin jersey next year. But tomorrow, I have a sneaking suspicion for Jude's tomorrow. I just think they've strengthened their team. There's a young fella called Pat Svalan, who's a famous father, playing midfield for them tomorrow. And they've another guy, Mannix, Cork fella. They've eight country fellas playing with them tomorrow, which would be quite unusual for a Dublin club. So it'll be a fascinating game. You know, it's a great story, a club trying to win their first one and them being so consistent. And they've a couple of right good dubs amongst them. Obviously, Kev McMenamin is one of our all-time favourites, and Paul Copeland is there, and Chris Guckey. And so it'll be a great game. It'll be well worth tuning in on TG Cahir tomorrow.
Thanks, Pillar.
Cheers.
Thanks, Des.
No problem. And just the last thing, you mentioned Leon McGuire, an elite sportswoman. We should have mentioned Rachel Blackmore on Betfair Chase at 3 o'clock.
A Plutard, is it going to win, Des?
I think it will, but it's a wordy favourite. Now, it's going up against Bristol the May. That's going for its fourth Betfair Chase. But what a story it would be for cap off an incredible 18 months for Rachel and Henry de Bromhead.
Oh, no, absolutely. We'll look forward to that. Thanks so much, Des, and thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah Donovan, Des Gibson and Pillar Caffrey on the Saturday panel here on Off the Ball. Chelsea have beaten Leicester 3-0 in the Premier League, and we got football Saturday between 3 and 5. We're going to build up to the Premier League after this.
Off the Ball on News Talk.